Exodus 5 and 6. God keeps saying to Pharaoh, "Let my people go that they may serve me." And I suggest the emphasis should be on the word me. They were slaves of Pharaoh, and now God says, "I want them to be slaves of me." So he was saying there's got to be a change of masters. And of course, that's the figure that is used in Romans chapter 6 for what's happened to us, that we were slaves of sin, and then at baptism, we became slaves of God and of righteousness. And baptism is like crossing the Red Sea. 1 Corinthians 10 is quite clear about that, that as Israel were baptized, as it were, into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, the cloud as in the water above them and the sea on both sides of them, a kind of total immersion, so we have been baptized into the Lord Jesus. We left Egypt. But we left Egypt in order to become his servants, his slaves even. And that idea is constantly alluded to. Because, for example, when you read about the daily tasks, verse 13, and the works that were to be done to be fulfilled for Pharaoh, later on, this is the same language that you find used in the Law of Moses about Israel's obligations to God to keep his commandments. And he says in verse 11, Pharaoh says, "None of your work, your obedience, is to be diminished." And that, again, is the same word that's used later in Deuteronomy about "do not decline, do not diminish from any of my commandments." So we are in this similar situation, not that we are under the law of Moses, but we are also the servants, the slaves of God. And really this shows that our relationship with him cannot be a hobby. This is not something you do just once a week or whatever as a kind of religious social club hobby. It is a life of service, because a slave was a slave 24/7 and didn't even own their own body. It all belonged to the master. And so it is with us. And the great paradox is that through that slavery, if you like, we come to the ultimate freedom. The ultimate freedom of being yourself forever and ever in the nature of God. And so that is, I think, a challenge to all attitudes which would say that, well, I shall do what I want in life, but sort of sanctify it with a bit of religion, with a bit of Bible reading, a bit of prayer, and a bit of going to church and so forth. Now, this is a demand for our heart, for our absolute total devotion to him unto death. This is what we are called to. And that is the difference between religion and spirituality. That if your spirit is being engaged by God, then that is you, and it takes absolute precedence in every part of your life. So in chapter 6 then, you come to this thing about the name of God. Because Moses is weak at this time. He's really quite weak, and he can't really believe that God is going to redeem his people and make them his servants, and that the people themselves don't really seem to want to become Yahweh's servants in a meaningful way. And so he talks about his name. And he says here in verse 2 that he has appeared before to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, the AV makes a big mistake by saying, "but by my name, Yahweh, I was not known to them." That's the opposite of what it should be. It should be a question mark there. "But by my name, Yahweh, was I not known to them?" Well, of course he was, because the name Yahweh doesn't just start beginning here. It was right back from the early Genesis. So he's saying, "as I was in the past with my people, so I will be now, and in fact, so I will be always." And this is the sort of mystery of this name. I am that I am. I was that I was. I will be who I will be. There are the three tenses all sort of put in together. And seven times here, in chapter 6, God says, I will. For example, verse 7, I will take you to me for the people. I will be to you a God. Verse 8, and I will bring you in unto the land which I swore to you. I will give it to you for an inheritance, because I am Yahweh. I am that I am. I will be that I will be. Therefore, I will give you this kingdom. And I think the idea really is that I will be is the God who will almost force through his purpose of salvation. He has promised to take them out of Egypt and give them his kingdom. And he does this, although he had to drag them kicking and screaming. I mean, they in their hearts, they turned back to Egypt. They wanted to go back to Egypt. They thrust Moses away from them. Ezekiel 20 says they took the idols of Egypt with them. Acts 7:43, Stephen says that they carried the star of their god Remphan, that's along with the totems, the standards of the tribes, and the tabernacle of Moloch, along with the tabernacle of Yahweh. They carried two tabernacles through the wilderness. And yet, despite all that, God gives them the land. He had said, he's going to say in Exodus 19, that if you're obedient to me, then you will be my people. But here he says, I will be your God. You shall be, you will be my people. So you could say that the name of God here specifically speaks in terms of salvation. And I think that that is very often the context of that idea of the name of Yahweh. And of course, it comes to its full term in Yahweh Shua, Yahoshua, Jesus. Yahweh is salvation. That was the supreme demonstration of the name. And this is why at the end of John 17, the prayer the Lord prays just before he goes out to die, he says that I have declared your name and will declare it. And I think he's referring there to the ultimate declaration of Yahweh, the God who will save, in his death upon the cross. And he goes on to say that the love wherewith you have loved me may be in them. So the ultimate response to that is love. Because when you perceive how God is almost forcing through his purpose with us, I say almost because, of course, he is not going to drag a person who does not wish to be in his kingdom into his kingdom. But he does wish to save. And that is so wonderful that you cannot be passive to that. And you will respond in love. And when we wonder quite where we are going in our lives, I will be. This is God's passion. This is the essence of his name. And by all means, he is, as I would put it, almost forcing through his purpose of saving us. So God is not passive to our salvation. He is not facing off against man over an open Bible and saying, well, it's over to you now. I did it all that I could for you, and over to you now. The Bible is a riddle to be solved. Solve it, and I'll sort of be there for you. Not at all. He is far more proactive, willing us towards salvation, because that is the essence of his name and purpose.